This is Authors in Focus.
Hi, I'm James Reed, fantasy author publishing under JMD Reed. My newest fantasy series is going strong. Readers have enjoyed Diamond Stained, now Oban and Naveena return for their fifth and final story. Things have never been more dangerous. They have survived the chaos of Kash, explored the dark mysteries of the Ruby Ruins, protected the Obsidian Mind, and obtained the Emerald Strength. But can they survive the Amethyst Shattering? The entirety of the 5-book Secret of the Jewel series is out on Amazon and free in Kindle Unlimited. Today, I'm joined by Stephanie Barr. She's the urban fantasy author of At a Cup of Chaos. How are you doing today, Stephanie?
I am doing great.
All right. I always like to start out these interviews with a fun question. And since you're a rocket scientist, I was just curious, what is your favorite space probe?
My favorite space probe. You know, I like a lot of the stuff that's off the wall. Okay. And so I have a lot of respect for the Russian rovers that they put on the moon when nobody was paying any attention that crawled all over it, and I bet you've never even heard of those.
I have heard of them. I don't know too much about what they actually did, but I am aware that they dropped some rovers all over the place. They dropped some on Venus too, didn't they? Or at least probes?
There were some probes on Venus. Most of the probes on Venus didn't last long enough to do more than take like a picture of the lens cap because it's pretty harsh environment on Venus.
Yeah. All right, that's pretty cool. All right, so how long have you wanted to be a writer, Stephanie?
When I was in sixth grade, I started writing. I wrote a few poetic lines because I was bored, and I started writing a little bit of poetry then. And by the time I was 13, so I was in ninth grade, but I had skipped a grade, so it was kind of complicated. I had started everything. Anytime anyone asked me to write an essay or something like that, it always ended up in the story form. Whether it was a poem, whether it was an essay, whether it was a short story. I just love to tell stories. I love to invent characters, and I've wanted to do that since I was 13.
Nice. And then you became a rocket scientist.
Well, I got to eat, too.
True.
Well, I went to college, and actually how I became a rocket scientist is sort of an interesting story by itself. I was actually planning to do something like journalism or maybe foreign languages because I love foreign languages.
Okay.
And I was really good at school. So I could have done, and not to sound conceited, but I could have done almost anything that didn't involve motor skills. My senior year, the last thing in the world I ever thought about being was somebody who had a degree in any sort of engineering. And then my senior year, I moved from Las Vegas, Nevada to Ada, Oklahoma. My father had gotten a job transfer. So my options for schools basically shrank to a state school in Oklahoma. And someone from OU came and said, you know, as bright as you are, you could get a scholarship from the engineering department and a scholarship from the physics department at the same time. And I'm like, oh, I would never be an engineer. But, you know, let me think about it, because a scholarship from two departments at the same time really sounded good. And that's exactly what happened. I ended up getting a degree in engineering physics because I could get a scholarship from both departments at the same time. And I got into it. It's a very hard major, I've been told. And I was just too stubborn to get out. And then I didn't want to work in military. That left me with civil, and I ended up working for NASA indirectly as a contractor. And I started there May of 89, so I've been doing that now for 31 years.
Nice. So what led you to publishing?
What led me to publish? Well, I still always wrote stories. I wrote poetry in high school and then into college, and then I started writing short stories. And I was teaching myself to write because I didn't have any formal training of any sort. I mean, I tested out of my English in college, and then when I took creative writing, the guy was like, well, you have a very popular style. You write stuff anybody could read, which I know, to me, that sounds like a compliment, but that's not how he meant it.
No. I mean, and, he's an academic, so of course they don't like the populace.
Right, he didn't like my stuff at all. I got an A, but it was one of those things that was not helpful.
Right.
And so I started writing short stories, and then I went from writing short stories, and I did get a few of them published. And then I started writing novels, and I had a life. I had kids, and I had my job. I had a really ugly first marriage and a very non-supportive husband. And then when I got my second marriage, my second husband was totally for the writing. He loved it, wanted to hear it. He's dyslexic, so he has to hear everything for it to really sink in. And I read him things, we talked it over, and we talked about stuff. And then by the time that marriage ended after 8 years, I had 7 novels written.
Okay.
So it makes a difference to be in the environment that you're in. And I like them, but marketing is not my strong suit.
That's the worst.
It's what I don't do best.
Yeah.
And so I never know. I never want to push it on anybody. I never want to tell any. I mean, I think it's good, but it's just my opinion. And the people who read it tell me that it's good.
Okay.
But again, it's what I love to read myself. So I like books that have humor in them and that have adventure in them and have a little romance in them and have pathos in them and have drama. I want everything. And so that's how I like my books to be. So I want them. And I love characters. Characters to me are my favorite part. The interaction of characters, the growth of characters. Love it. My favorite part.
All right. And that sounds like a lot of fun.
I had all these books and a divorce, and I was working myself through life, and I go, you know, even if nobody reads them but a couple people, they're not doing – nobody's going to read them sitting on my hard drive.
That is very true.
And so I started self-publishing, and I went through all of those books and took some of my old short stories and put them in a book that showed how I grew as a writer from one point to another.
Yes, so I did actually see that one on Amazon.
Right. That's the only one that Amazon will let me sell for free, unlike the other places. Because I like to show that you can teach yourself. You can read your own stuff and see what's wrong with it and go, okay, next time I need to do this better. And then see that growth as you go through. And I have 2 anthologies, and I think it's 11 novels, and then several mini anthologies. Almost all of my novels have a mini anthology that's free, that's like precursor, a couple short stories that introduce you to the characters and stuff. So
yeah, I think that a lot of how you learn how to be a writer is just you have to do a lot of writing. And it's kind of like you can know all the rules and all the things you should or shouldn't do, but if you don't actually like spend a lot of time writing and creating stories and, you know, figuring out where you messed up and how to do it better next time. I don't know. That's my opinion. How the best way to get good at writing.
I don't know if it's the best way, but I know it's the way that I did.
Yeah.
So it worked for me.
Yeah. I didn't take an English class after high school.
You know, and neither did I. And it's not that I don't like English or I don't think those things are important. But I wanted to, almost every time I went somewhere for advice, I don't know if this has happened to you too, but every time you'd read a book on, you know, how to write better or all that other stuff, so much of the book is, first of all, so much of the book is how to get an idea. Well, that is not my problem. If I wrote a book for every idea I've had so far, I'd be writing for the next 1,000 and a half years, and I'm expecting to have more ideas in that time.
Yeah, so, that's the worst part. You always get those new ideas, and you're like, but I need to finish this old idea. So you just need to rattle around the back of my head, and maybe I'll get to you.
Until it gets there.
Yeah.
And then a lot of the rest of it was rules. But the problem with the rule is I can look at my favorite authors and see almost all of them not following those rules that were in there. And to me, a rule is useful as a guideline. You know, you don't want to overdo this. You don't want to have a stagnant first part of your book. Well, that's true. You have to have something happening, but it doesn't have to be action. You don't have to jump into action. There's lots of terrific books that introduce you to characters effectively, but that's not something that you read in books.
Right, right. Well, it has to be something interesting. And interesting, I mean, I've read some books that are interesting and weird things. Like, I've read some like techno thrillers that they spend an entire chapter describing like how something functions, and it's actually really engrossing. And it's just,
you have to find something that's going to appeal to your audience.
Yeah.
And draw them in, whatever it is. I'm a character reader. That's what I read for. And so I'm a character writer. And that's what I write. So I write, I almost always start with my characters in a situation to showcase who they are.
Okay.
And that might be action. And that might be something dramatic. And it might not be, depending on the circumstance. And so I went through the rules that I think you get. I mean, I've read plenty of those without having to take a class. But I made sure that what I was writing was something that would appeal to me as a reader. And I've read a lot of books. And I'm a very eclectic reader. You know, you went through my favorite books, you're going to find romance, you can find historical, you're going to find science fiction and fantasy, of course. And you're going to find Poe and Shakespeare and Saki. And, you know, you don't know who you're going to see. It's going to be everybody.
Okay.
So I like people who tell a good story, and I like people who tell really have compelling characters. And different authors that I read gave me different things. Poe is terrific at drawing out an emotional response from somebody, and so is Stephen King. Stephen King is really good at writing children. You have no idea. Well, you probably do. That's a really unusual skill. If you look at a lot of authors who have written children, most of the children don't sound anything like a real child.
Yeah.
But his do. They act and they talk and they interact in ways that feel so genuine to me that I'm just blown away. So I remember that. And so I go to all my favorite authors and I figure out which stories caught me, sucked me in. And when I come out the other side, I'm like, man, that was terrific. I have to read it again and figure out why. And I would do that. I'd read some books 5 or 6 times to get what worked so well so that I could remember that when I'm writing my own stuff.
Nice.
So
I wish I had that that focus sometimes. Like studying is never anything I ever developed. Like I breezed through high school and then I didn't really go to college, so I never really learned to study. It just was, I didn't have to in high school. Not to brag, I just listened to the lecture, read the book once, and I was good for a test.
Well, no, I was the same way, so I get you. And I did have to study in college because of the major I chose. There are some majors I might not have, but I had to for the one I chose. But it really was more than that. I can go in, I'm a rereader, so I love rereading my favorite books. I've got, well, they're all packed away right now because I just moved. But
oh, you just moved. I'm in the process of moving. I'm moving on Tuesday.
Yeah, so.
Oh, everything is in boxes around me.
Right. I have 6 bookshelves of books that I reread, and most of those books I've read more than a dozen times.
Oh, I did that all the time when I was younger. Now I just wish I had the time. I do listen to audiobooks of my favorite stuff, though.
I like to listen to audiobooks of my favorite stuff. I don't like to listen to an audiobook of something I haven't read before, because then I have to focus on that.
Right, right. Yeah, but if it's
Read before, I've got a whole bunch of Georgette Heyer. Those are my favorite on audiobooks because her dialogue is so charming and they just make me laugh. And I can catch the joke and still go on and keep working.
Nice.
So,
well, let's talk about some of your characters.
Okay.
You wrote A Cup of Chaos, which is an urban fantasy novel, which appears from the blurb to combine demons, magic, and aliens with death rays.
That's right.
That is a very fascinating premise. I'm just curious, how did those all come about?
Well, I started out writing a short story.
Okay.
And I was writing a short story for Witch Anthology. And the only thing I had in my brain when I sat down to start writing is I didn't want to have, you know, your typical young, sexy witch type thing. I had like an old inner 40s, a pudgy witch, you know, out there in the cemetery gathering herbs in the middle of the night. And my ex-husband had posted a meme saying that he'd really like to see magic become mainstream in a story, you know, where people could get a spell to go with their, a spell for charisma in their coffee if they're going in for an interview or something like that.
Okay.
And I liked that idea. So the premise was she was a witch in a world where magic had become mainstream. And she was gathering stuff, but then I needed to have a conflict. And so I said, so everybody was accepted except demons.
Okay.
And then it just, from there, my brain, because it does that, my brain does this to me all the time, goes off into a war with the demons. They were invited to join everybody else. They said no. This is the human side of it. They said no, and then they started an ugly war. And in the end, the humans went to the demon realm, killed off everybody except for a few, and those few are in the government working as slaves, powering them, giving an extra power of magic boost to sorcerers at the capital.
Okay.
Well, as she's gathering all this, she hears a mob, and she's reacting to it, you know, like her instincts from, you know, generations of witches were reacting to it, where it's scaring her. And okay. It turns out they're chasing this little demon, it looks like a fox. Well, it looks like a big cat, but it's got coloring like a fox and has two tails.
Okay.
And she knows that's a demon. And it just looks at her and whimpers, and so she hides it. Well, hiding a demon and being a demon are both capital crimes. So she hides it in there, and she manages to talk the mob that she doesn't know anything about it and convince them to leave her alone, and she goes back home. And then she's trying to figure out, what am I going to do with this demon? And the next morning, there's a full-grown demon looking over, wants to know where his son is. And so I ended up writing this. Almost the rest of the story takes place in this demon world, and I just invented this and that, and I had all these characters and these rules and their side of the war and all these other things, and I just, the story grew way bigger than I was originally intending.
Nice.
But I loved the character interactions, and I loved where you could just have a change in perspective and then everything's different than what you thought it was. And I love doing that anyway, but I really love doing that in this instance. And at the end of the story, I said, I'm going to have to take this concept, this demon world and human world dichotomy, and make a novel. But what can I do to add something oomphy after that? And so I threw in an alien invasion, and this happens in the first chapter, so it's not really a spoiler. In the first chapter, we have our main character is a sorceress, and she works at the capital, and she uses the power of the demons that are captured to control weather. So that's her job.
Okay.
While she's there, she gets this sense of something impending, something bad.
So this is Beth Parker, right?
This is Beth Parker.
Okay.
And the aliens are using a big death ray beam that would kill everything on the Earth. And they've used it before. We don't know that at the moment. They've used it before, but last time the demons deflected it.
Okay.
Well, the only demons on the planet are this little cache of slaves. And they use so much power in order to just barely get it to miss the Earth. So in other words, deflect it just enough. Before they reflected it and killed off the invading armada. This time they deflected it enough to save the Earth, but it costs them everything. So all the demons on Earth are dead. But the aliens are still there.
Okay.
So the only one who's only people are, who have a chance of saving the Earth from the aliens at this particular point, if they aim their beam again, are going to be the demons. And Beth's job is to go to the demon world, and her aunt is the main character from my short story.
Okay.
And convince them to take out, to do whatever they can to stop, to save the Earth. Well, as you might guess, humans aren't entirely popular with the demon world. And so it was, I like to give myself impossible problems and then solve them.
Okay.
It was trying to convince the demons it was in their own best interest, partly, and partly to honor the demons that gave their lives, who had the most reason in the world to hate humans. And then also because it's, the humans are necessary. Demons can marry amongst themselves. But if you have two demons marrying, what happens is they've got sort of like a self-canceling, their genetic material. There's something that the Manx cat does that I've always found fascinating, so I've used it a couple times. You don't mate two Manx cats together. Because if you do, the kittens that have both that dominant gene will be dead. Oh. And so you mate them with a regular cat because you have to have the dominant gene and a non-dominant gene in order for them to survive. That's kind of how it is for the demon world. They, you can survive with two demons, but what you have is an undersized demon and not as strong and powerful as a regular demon that was mated with a human being. So you really need human beings in order to have your next generation. Now, demons live thousands of years, so it's not like they have to have humans right now, but eventually they're going to need more.
Okay.
And so that's what Add a Cup of Chaos is because once I got there, then it was a crazy adventure. We've got spaceships and dragons and I don't know. I'm trying to think of something I don't have real quick. I have a cauldron in there. I have brew potions. I have invisibility. I have metal vapor arcing. I mean, just all kinds of fun stuff.
That does sound like a lot of fun stuff. So, what is next for you in your writing career?
Well, I signed up for a bunch of anthologies where they're looking for either short stories or novellas, like maybe 12 of those. And okay. And some of them are outside my normal. I don't usually prescribe what I'm writing. I just like write what I feel like.
Sure.
And so it's sort of like testing myself, challenging myself to write stories that fit into these boxes.
Yeah, I get you.
So like the first one is one for a Black Lives Matter anthology. And so I think they were going for PNR, and I'm already writing a story that's got children in an orphanage in a science fiction setting. So I don't know. I never know what, because my brain twists everything into something else.
Sure, sure.
I'm eclectic with my stories, and I never know what is going to come out. So I have like an autistic child. My children are both on the spectrum.
Yep,
and
no, it's all right.
With a black child. And one of the things I like about my children is that they don't understand. I mean, racism doesn't even make any sense to them. Doesn't make any sense to me either. But so it's a really good place to showcase how silly that is.
Okay.
With her character. That's what ended up happening. So I started writing that.
Okay. So anything else coming up from you?
I've got, I do have a few short stories I have in mind. One is a thriller that's kind of left in a set in a science fiction setting, okay. Where I have a cyborg woman who's been through a lot, and she's just a technical genius, and she does a job for someone. Basically, she gets contracted by one of her friends who had bitten off more than he could chew, and so she went and did the work for him. And he was working for an organized crime organization, and they caught him trying to steal information, which the security software that she wrote caught. him doing. And that made them think that maybe he knew somebody else was involved, and so she is the target of organized crime. And when they try and take her out, they accidentally take out someone else, and they frame her for it. So the cops are after her, too. And that means she has to figure out, she has to solve the crime. And all she has to help her is a novelist with his cat, because I like cats. Cats are in all my books. Cats are in 100% of my books.
All right. So where can our listeners find you, Stephanie, on the internet?
You could find me on Amazon and Barnes & Noble, Kobo. I'm wide distribution. I have a website, Stephanie E. Barr. That's STEPHANIEBARR.US. You could find me on Facebook. I have a fan group there called Cats and Dragons. And I'm on Twitter, too, but I don't Twitter much. It's too short. I like a lot of words.
Fair enough. So it was really great talking with you, Stephanie.
Thank you.
Have yourself a good day.
You too. Thank you very much.
This has been Authors in Focus. You can find my fantasy novels on Amazon. Follow news of my writing at my blog, jmd-read.com, and follow me on Twitter at jmdread. You can also join my reader group on Facebook, Fantastical Worlds of the Imagination. You can find more episodes of the podcast at fantasy-focus.com and wherever your favorite podcast is hosted.